Greetings and welcome to In the Spotlight podcast with myself, Bill Cummings. Today, I am joined by Laura Mary Carter.
Hi, how's it going?
Not too bad, yourself?
Yes, very well, thank you.
So, you joined me ahead of a first solo tour, is that right?
I haven't done like a proper tour. Yeah, I've done like one-off shows or like, I did two solo shows in a row, but yeah, not like a proper tour. So yeah, I've got, I start a tour on Saturday with Queens of the Stone Age, and then I do my solo headline tour.
Okay. Wow. Yeah. Okay. So that's a good one, isn't it? That's a good support.
Yeah. They're doing like a stripped down kind of versions of all their songs. And it's at like theatres, like the Royal Albert Hall and stuff like that.
Wow.
My new music kind of suits that vibe. So, because people were like, didn't really understand why Blood with Shoes wasn't doing the support. And I was doing the support, but I was trying to explain to my friends, like, oh, it's like a stripped down version of them.
Well, so, and also it's good to get your solo work out there, isn't it? And
yeah, solo... yeah. Because I think people just like, oh, it's not as rock, so it doesn't make, you know, it's not as much sense, but it does make sense in this way that they're doing the show. So yeah, it's exciting, but I've got lots to sort out because I'm doing it very DIY, as I always do. So
cool. Yeah, I get that. I've always been DIY. So mainly I got you on to talk about your new album, Bye Bye Jackie.
Yeah.
I really like it actually. And I don't know. It's got sort of different elements in there.
Yeah.
Sort of all in a sort of cinematic feel almost, I feel like.
Yeah.
I don't want to mention David Lynch, but I'm going to mention David Lynch. I know it's a cliche, but I've been rewatching Twin Peaks recently.
Yeah.
Obviously, a bit inspired by the fact that he passed away at the beginning of the year. But also a bit inspired by the fact that when I first watched it, I sort of have a patchy memory of it. So,
yeah.
But I don't know. It's got this sort of noirish feel with the sort of, you mentioned vintage soul, and there's even a bit of country in there as well, isn't there? So I suppose it's just I wonder what inspired that, I guess.
I think I've always been into that sort of sounding music. Like before I was in Blood with Shoes, that was kind of what I was like drawn to a lot. And when I was about 19 or something, I used to like DJ around London vinyl, and it was all that kind of like 60s garage, 50s rock and roll, Elvis, like Patsy Cline, like all that kind of stuff. And so I've always been into that sort of thing, and sort of people that have known me for a long time, it doesn't seem that weird that I'm doing this. But obviously then I've gone down a road of being in like a rock band, grunge sort of thing, which I also love. And so yeah, it's just kind of come back round, really. I think I always had a little like affinity to sort of country music, and I think because my name sounds pretty country, it's always been in there. So that little bit I've always liked as well. That old country, not so much the new stuff, but I don't know. I just felt like if I'm going to do a solo thing, I want to do it so far from the band, because otherwise there's no point me even trying to do something else, you know. So yeah, that's what I aimed for. It's quite a challenge because obviously I've been doing the same thing for like 20 years. So it was good. It was good. And it feels very me. It feels sort of like it incorporates stuff that I like. And yeah, like David Lynch. And that's definitely wasn't a conscious decision to have it sound like that. But obviously I'm a big fan. So it goes in there. And I'm quite a visual person. So I feel like the cinematic element of it makes sense as well.
Yeah. And I suppose with the reason people often mention Lynch is because of his choices and soundtrack. And then there's almost like that feeling of what's going on underneath it. You know what I mean? And there's a bit of that in some of your tracks. June Gloom. Yeah. It might sound sort of like a pretty tune or whatever, but there's a sort of a bit of a twist, a dry heartbreak in it and stuff.
Yeah, I think when I think about Twin Peaks, for example, it's got that kind of hammy-ness to it.
Sort of.
And that's slightly what I wanted this album to have, like in terms of like the titles of the songs, sort of blatant lines that are quite on the nose. Kind of like the first line of the album is like, you were my baby and I was your angel. Like that kind of, it's almost like, yeah, it's a little bit hammy, it's a little bit
50s almost, like 50s driving sort of feel.
Yeah, and so I wanted to incorporate that, but also have like modern elements in it. So yeah, that was like my idea behind it. I'd say my idea, but it just kind of happened quite naturally. And then once it started happening, I was like, okay, well, it's gonna, like, this makes sense to me. It all kind of came into place in my brain.
And I read you sort of wrote it in hotel rooms and at home and stuff.
Yeah,
was that between tours and?
Yeah, it was actually, I did write a lot on like a tour. Just sort of like after the gig, I'd come back, and I think I'm like very much, once I played a show, like I always want like a bit of a downtime. My mate Steve, he just loves like getting out there and talking to people. We're just so opposite. So he'd be out there like talking to people at merch, and I'd be backstage writing these songs while no one was in the dressing room.
Interesting.
Yeah, so I was doing a bit of that, and then at home, I was writing a little bit, and it's kind of all over the place, really. Just my lifestyle is always a bit here and there, so I just did it when I could, and then I like booked in the recording before it was even finished, so I like forced myself to get it all done.
Yeah, and it has got sort of a late night feel, so that does make sense when you talk about when you're writing it.
Yeah, I'm kind of a late night person. I'm a bit of a night owl.
Yeah. And you work with two producers on it, Oscar Robertson and David Barden.
Yeah, that's right.
What did the sort of like perspective that they could bring to the recordings, I guess?
Well, I didn't know them that well, but I met them through Miles Kane, actually.
Oh, right.
Some singing with him on the tour once. And he'd been made a record with them. And we kind of went to their studio to like do some singing. And so I met them there, and it was like, it's this cute little studio in Hackney, and it's just a private studio. They're like, they're young, they're like hungry. They're like these two guys that they can play everything, and they're just, you know, they're playing it every night. Like Dave's playing with me on this Queens of Stone Age tour. So we've been talking a lot, but like, you know, the last two nights, him and Oscar have been playing with the harp player, like these gigs. They're just some of those people that like, they're just involved in music, and they keep their chops up, so they're constantly playing. And I really like being around that, because I feel like the more that I've been in music, and people that are more successful, they sort of do less. And so it's nice to just be around sort of musicians that are like really hungry still.
Yeah.
So that's why I wanted to work with them, because I just felt like they're the kind of people I want to do this with. Plus, they can play everything, so we didn't need loads of different musicians. We could just do it us three, and then maybe get into the ends. And their style was much more aligned to this kind of world, and so it just fell into place. Really, it just felt like it was meant to be. And so I came in with the songs, just on like I wrote them all on like this little nylon guitar. So I had the songs fully formed. But then we discussed like what direction it would go in. And it really was just like jamming. Like we would jam, like Oscar would get in the room, drums, and we'd set up in the other room where we just jam along, and then be like, what's the right tempo? What's the right feel? So it was like, it was pretty cool. And we just chucked loads of stuff on it and then took it away, you know, that kind of thing. And it was great. And it was like, I stayed back in London. I used to live in that part of London when I was young. So it was quite nice to be back, and it felt a bit full circle for me about kind of where I used to go and DJ and do all that sort of involved in that kind of music, and go back and do it there. So, yeah.
And the first song you showed off, it was Elvis Widow, is that right? And is it based on anyone, or is it a character you sort of inhabited, or is it yourself, or a bit of a mixture of everything?
It is a bit of a mixture of everything, but the whole record is like the up and down sort of like relationships, basically. So it's kind of That song is like, I am a big Elvis fan, as people know, so I had to get an Elvis line in there somewhere. But I think it summed up kind of a bit of like when I was sort of in a relationship where the other person just wasn't really in the same place. And it's about kind of longing for someone that's not really there. I think a lot of people can relate to that, sort of like maybe hanging around waiting for like someone that you think, you know, that's a bit wishy-washy, for example. And it was kind of like that, really. And I thought, well, yeah, people like longing for something that's maybe not quite real, kind of fantasize about this life that isn't actually there, or, you know, the potential of something. So that's kind of the theme behind it. But I thought like Elvis Widow was kind of a cool line. I don't even know how I came up with that. But yeah, it was like obviously Elvis is dead, so just wait, like longing for someone that's not there.
Like a metaphor. And four letter word as well. That sounds quite similar in terms of the experience of a relationship.
Same thing, probably about the same. And like, yeah, it's a little bit like just, yeah, just really trying really hard to work something. It doesn't ever accumulate, and then after a while, we're just like, look, it doesn't matter anymore. Like, just doesn't matter because all the things I wanted to say, all the things I feel after like time heals, then it's like you don't really need, don't have, I don't really have anything left to say.
Is the four-letter word love, or
Well, yeah, it could be that, or it could be nasty. It could be nasty words. It could be, that's what I like about it. Who
You don't know, sort of gives
knows?
you that illusion.
What day am I feel? What? How do I feel today? Could
Yeah.
be that word, and then yeah.
That's the
But
problem with the interviews in a way, isn't it? It's like it's hard as a songwriter to sort of
yeah.
pin it down when you don't, you actually want to leave it open in a, and the interpretation open in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I think, yeah, it's quite, this has been a hard one to talk about because it is very personal. But I think, I also think it's very relatable. So I'm sort of trying to explain it the best I can. I mean, I feel like it's pretty explanatory.
And
But yeah.
it's even though it's about heartbreak and stuff, it is quite, there's humor in there, and it does sound, it sounds quite fun, and it is quite like, you know, toe tapper and stuff like that. So
Yeah,
also,
that's good. That's exactly it. Because I think I was like, I want this record to be my personality in a way. And I think I am kind of a bit of a hopeless romantic and all these things. And I have had these ups and downs relationships because my life hasn't been quite a normal life. But I also like to have a laugh. I mean, my whole family are Irish. We just laugh about everything. And I think people that know me really well know that I am up for that. I think from the surface, it doesn't, I don't seem like that, but I am always messing around and stuff. So I wanted to have a bit of humor in there because that is actually me. I'm glad that come across a little bit.
And I mentioned it before, but June Gloom, like sort of that feeling of summertime sadness almost as a
Yeah.
But I always get that curious feeling. It's like it's a time when you're supposed to feel happy, or you're
Yeah.
supposed to feel. I feel like that about Christmas sometimes. It's like that idea that you're supposed to feel happy, and you're supposed to, but actually, December, I always find a little bit like a wistful sort of, you know, sort of an ending of an era almost. Like I
Yeah.
find a little bit sad actually. So there's
Yeah.
that, you know, that juxtaposition, isn't there?
Yeah, I think I always wanted to have a song called June Gloom because I lived in LA for a little while, and everyone used to talk about the June Gloom. In June, it would get really grey in the sky, and I thought that's a cool. I'm sure there's loads of songs called it, but I was like, I like that kind of phrase because it is, yeah, exactly what you're saying. And so, yeah, it just, I don't know. Sometimes songs write themselves a little bit, and that one really did, just felt right, and yeah, and then made the video in June. Tokyo. It all just Sometimes, like, the universe just does things.
Yeah, it could also be a character. Just thinking about it now,
Yeah,
June Clune.
totally.
Oh, and that was something I was going to ask you. One of your quotes, you were talking about Jackie as a character as well. Is it an actual character or again?
Jackie is like a symbol of
Yeah.
everyone. I mean, there is someone that had a similar name, not quite the same name, that's inspired the whole record in the beginning. But it's really, for me, it's just like a symbol of like it almost like a funeral. The record's like a funeral of Jackie, but Jackie could be anyone. But like it for me, it's like letting go of sort of bad habits, letting go of like regrets, letting go of getting new, like a new start. And I don't know, it just sort of made sense to me, saying goodbye to maybe all these different people in my life as well. And in a sort of metaphoric way, like in a just, yeah, letting go and like healing. So yeah, Jackie is kind of like a character to that. Although I actually was thinking I should tell everyone it's about Jackie Weaver. Do you remember that?
I
Jackie
don't.
Weaver. No, anyone that knows remembers really well. But when I say it, some people are like, what? And it was in COVID when there was like this, it was like a church group or something, and
Oh yeah, of
you
course.
remember Jackie Weaver
Yeah,
has
of course.
this story.
Yeah, the Zoom conversation.
Yeah,
Yeah.
and I desperately wanted to get, I was hoping she'd be on one of those sites where you can hire people to like say happy birthday or whatever. I wanted to find Jackie Weaver so she could announce the album or like promote the album, but I couldn't find her on there.
Yeah, she came sort of a minor celebrity, didn't she, for a bit
Yeah,
there?
Jackie Weaver.
Yeah. You've got Lee Kernan from Idols on the, is he a friend or how did that happen?
He's a friend. Yeah, actually, we bonded over Twin Peaks. We're such nerds about it. And we were going to do some Twin Peaks songs together, and then I played him my some of my new songs, and he was like, really liked the record, and he was like, can I play on this song? And I was like, yeah, of course, give it a go. So
Cool.
he played guitar on that, which it's exactly what I wanted, because I was going to do the guitar lead. But I was like, I kind of want it like a bit weird. I want it like a bit George Harrison and stuff. And then when he said he wanted to do it, I was like, oh my God, yes, do it. Because I was like, I don't know how I'm gonna quite get the right. I know I'll be very critical of my guitar line. So I was like, yeah, it was kind of cool that he wanted to do it. So he's a friend. We met quite a long time ago now, but yeah. So that was really cool.
And you know, with the bit that you were talking about, like records you used to play and stuff, is there any specific kind of records or artists that kind of not inspired it, but you know, that it within that realm that you love?
Yeah, I mean, I always love Wanda Jackson, and you can't really hear that in this, but that was one of my big loves. Elvis, obviously. Etta James. I loved like all the women. I still love it. All different kind of stuff. But I don't know if there's like one thing that's really inspired. Definitely Patsy Cline. I thought about
Yeah.
the lyrics like a bit.
Yeah, is it Who Are You Fooling? I thought in particular had a country sort of vintage sound when I was listening to it before.
When I wrote that song, it had that feel. But when we went to record it, we were like, let's try and make it like completely different. So
Yeah.
we tried to make it sound like a French like air kind of band, and like we thought it was great. And I remember we went home that night and we were like, this is really cool. And then the next day we listened and we were like, this is bad. And we were like, we think it just, we were like, I think it's calling out to just stay in that country realm. So we went back to the drawing board and got one of our friends in to play a lap steel on it. And we were like, yeah, that it just needed it. It was like we really tried to stay away from it, but
Yeah.
it was calling
It's
out.
interesting. Country has sort of had a bit of a renaissance in the last 5 years, hasn't it, really?
Yeah, I think it's always been huge in the US,
Yeah.
but I think, yeah, it's become a bit more like,
Mainstream almost.
yeah.
Even somebody like, well, she isn't mainstream. Well, I suppose she is. C-Mat.
Yeah,
She's got a
she's got that.
big country thing, hasn't she?
Yeah, and I suppose because she's Irish as well, there's always that,
Yes.
like, there's always going to be that maybe everyone says she's country, but in my mind, I can hear it a little bit like, yeah, like traditional as well. So she's kind of got the mix of that. But yeah, she's blown up really. So it's cool. It's like going in mainstream country.
Celtic. Yeah,
Yeah.
there is a Celtic thing, isn't there, with the country thing as well?
Yeah, exactly.
Like a folk tradition of it, or show tunes and things.
Yeah, I think that's where my like love comes from, like why there's a bit of country in the stuff that I like. Because growing up, like my parents would just play Irish traditional music. I mean, I've just grown up with it and spent a lot of summers in Ireland with my cousins and family, and that's what I grew up listening to. So it all makes sense if you know me, but it doesn't make sense if you just know me from Blubber Shoes, because everyone thinks I'm from Brighton as well. So.
Yeah,
Yeah,
it's funny that, isn't it? And you've got this tour coming up. You said about support dates, but you've also got your headline tour, haven't you, in November, is that right?
yes, my headline tour starts sort of late November, and
Yeah,
that's
looking
gonna be
forward.
full band. Yeah, that's gonna be really fun, I think. I'm just like trying to get through this next bit, and then I can.
Yeah.
When I get excited about that.
And then you've got like f sort of European tour in February, like mini European, like Ireland, Dublin, Paris, Amsterdam, Belgium, Germany. Sounds good.
Yeah, no, that would be good as well. It'd be like
Yeah.
a little time off Christmas and then.
Go again.
Yeah, then it'd be nice to be back in Ireland as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to that a lot. I think it'd be good to have the band as well, because I think Europe I might have to do it a bit more stripped down just because of like
Yeah.
money stuff, but the UK I'll be doing it with the full band, like keys and drums and bass. So
That's
yeah.
an interesting point, actually. Yesterday I was looking at Shirley Manson was talking about
Yeah,
the
I posted
music industry.
that.
Yeah, it was very interesting because, and today we're talking about costs because they're talking about it's their final tour in America because of the cost of it. And also talking about, current situation with music, just how unsustainable it could be as a
It
touring
really is.
band. How do you find it at the moment?
Oh, finding it very hard. And like, to just do an amazing tour like the one I'm about to do, I'm losing a lot of money and fund that through Blubber Shoes, but it's not like I'm earning loads of money for it. It's really, really hard. And you have to
Yeah.
do different jobs, and I just don't
Yeah.
think it knows. I just don't even knows. And it every time it gets the piss is taken out of you again and again, because everyone around music seems to get paid.
Yes.
But we that honestly, I mean, I pay to play a lot of these gigs. And I mean, at this point in my career, that shouldn't be happening. And then to think about all these new artists coming up, they haven't got a chance unless you're rich. Unless you come from rich, wealthy family, and that's where it gets hard, because there are plenty of people that have got sort of backup,
Yes.
they can just go and do these things. So then it's like no one talks about it then. But
No, it's almost like a taboo thing, isn't it? I wrote an article about, like, I think it was earlier this year, about the class divide of music, and the sort of, like, you talked about privilege and like how hard it is as a, depending on your background, how hard it can be. And it's something, I suppose it's because people don't, especially on social media, they don't want to. Sometimes they don't want to talk about the reality of it. It's almost like they'd rather talk about, well, I'm doing well, I'm doing this and I'm doing that. And I understand because you want to promote yourself, don't you? But there is a reality to it as well.
I guess you just don't want to be the negative Nancy all the time.
Yeah,
I mean, like
yeah.
the world has got a lot more problems going on,
Definitely.
but
But
it is hard, and I do often struggle with that, because I just think like the only reason I'm still here doing it is because when me Steve and I started, there was a bit of money in music. If
yeah.
I'd started now, there's no way that, like, I mean, I struggle. Like, I have to work other all kinds of jobs to just pay my rent, and I mean, I at this point, I'm going on a rant now, but like, I actually, like, my flat has been sold by someone that's like buying up all the building. I'm priced out of my t of the town I live. So now I don't even know. By the time I come back from that tour, I haven't even got home. So that's the reality. And I just think that it's, yeah, it does anger me. And I've really struggled to like get excited then about certain things because I know I'm just got to do X, Y, Z to just like pay off that debt from being able to do some gigs. And so it does get a bit hard, especially when everyone's like, come to Spain or come to something that's like, well,
Yeah.
I would if I actually got paid.
Yeah, that's going to cost me. So it's kind of like a stress, isn't it?
Oh God, it's so much
I've
on our.
had financial issues in the past, and it's just like a load you carry with you, and it's
Yeah, all
stressful. And
times. And you're sort of, yeah, I mean, to do this, like, you know, I'm doing an amazing tour of Queen of the Stone Age, but like, I can't afford to take any crew. So I'm doing everything myself. And they're such big venues, but like, you would never believe that. But like, that's the reality. And that's
And
Michael Jackson's daughter supported them on their last leg. I mean, she's going to be fine. But I'm not, you know, a rich person, so it's difficult, and I hate to be negative Nancy on it, but
no, I think it's a real problem because as Shirley Manson said, it's like in the future you won't get the esoteric or adventurous people or people from different backgrounds coming into music with
yeah.
different voices and perspectives because the cost of it is prohibitive, unless there's a real conversation about how things can change and how we can fund music,
Yeah,
because
because it's now it's like getting less and less and less, and like
yes.
obviously Spotify, and you know, COVID was an excuse to half all our fees, and that's never gone up. Everyone else is like, I mean, everyone in music that I work around, like they get a paid a wage, they probably have a house or some kind of security, and we're the ones like. We're the reason why everyone around us has this job, but we're always made to feel like we should be grateful for the little like things we get. And
Yeah, and there's that real like dichotomy between the sort of top end of the music industry these days. I almost feel like it's like super 80s, as in you've got like the top of the end of the industry that's like making the
Big bet.
money. And then or certain artists, like a handful of artists, and then everyone else struggling almost. Like whereas there used to be more of a middle ground of indie artists, and there would be, like you said, funding, and there'd be a bit more backing and stuff, but it's just gone. It's
It's
just gone.
gone. And yeah, so it's really tough, and like you have to really want to do it. Like the amount of times, you know, I've been on the end of my like, you know, it's a struggle and it's a stress. And I'd be like, why, you know, have these conversations with my family, like can't like take the stress anymore, like, you know. But the problem is like it's like music's kind of like chosen me.
Yeah, it's like an
I can't.
addiction, isn't it? It's like
Yeah.
a obsession. It's like a
And
thing that drives you. It's can't
I'm,
you can't
yeah.
just step away from it and go, oh well, it's not paying me. So because that is the other dichotomy of music. It's like, it's an art form. You just in you, isn't it? It's like.
Yeah, he put so many, I've never, I was saying yesterday, I was like, you know, if I were, I've never worked this hard in my life. Like, I've had loads of jobs in my life. Like, I've had corporate jobs. I've worked as a cleaner. I've had a million jobs, but I've never worked this hard in my life. And I was like, if I work this hard in a banking job or something, I'd be a millionaire. It's like, it's insane the amount of work. But yeah, it's just crazy times. And like, I think it is going to get to like a really, I think it's always been kind of a corrupt industry, but it's got worse and worse and worse. And you know, the crazy thing is, back when, like even in the early 2000s, you know, there was still a bit of money here and there, but now it's like no labels give you any money, but yet they're making more money than they ever did because they're streaming money, which all they have to do is put something online and they get an income, like. And they partly own the company, like the majors own that kind of Spotify. So it's insane. I think they make like 800,000 a minute.
Good Lord.
And so there's more money. They've got more money than they ever had. We're told it's like nothing, like literally there's nothing. And oh, if you want, we'll own your album forever and we'll give you like £2,000.
Christ.
Yeah.
It's just
So
mad, isn't it? It doesn't
yeah.
work at all. And
I actually think all musicians should actually get together and do,
yeah.
like, but how do we do that? Because there's always.
I've been talking to this guy, I think he's called Hayden. I intend to write an article about it, but he's putting forward this idea of he thinks the musicians' union, it needs teeth and it needs to be a proper
Yeah,
one, you know?
agreed.
And then there needs to be his idea. And I don't know if I'd go this far because I don't know how it would practically work, but he's talking about you striking, you know? I
Yeah.
mean, the problem with that though is then it's a choice, isn't it? Of,
Yeah.
you know, you want, like, you're going on this tour. It's like you want a tour though, don't you? So it's like, how do you, I don't know how that would work practically, but I've just been talking, he's an academic, and I've just been talking to him about some of his ideas, which are interesting. You know, I just think there was a few years ago, and during COVID, the Broken Record campaign, which Tom Gray from
Yeah, he's my friend. Yeah.
Gomez was involved with, and he did get quite far with it, but then it seemed to stall at the, you know, obviously once they did the findings, they never re the recommendations, they never really
Right.
took it any further, you know,
I
so.
mean, bless Tom, he works so hard just to get like anything through, and he's the only one bloody doing anything. I honestly like, and sometimes I bump into him because we live kind of close to each other, and like he's just completely exhausted from it, but he's like really trying, and like there just needs to be more people like him that actually have, you know, a voice. And he's, I mean, he doesn't have to do all that, but he's been doing it because he is able to, like, he does know all those sort of people, and he is quite good at talking, and he can like be the voice. But yeah, we need more people like that. And I do think we need to do like a march or something, because it's like actually it's insane, and how much, you know, it's crazy. And just like, I mean, I'm in and out of court with this ex manager that we've got that we fired 8 years ago, and he was paid everything. He only worked with us for like 8 months, and he's still trying to get money out of us till 2035. It's like insane. Like he is absolutely insane. He hasn't done any of the work, and this is what we're dealing with all the time. I'm in and out of court with him because he won't stop taking his small claims.
Crazy.
And it's just, this goes on. And he's done it to loads of musicians, but they've all too scared to talk about it. And it's crazy, but yeah, here we are. But we still do it anyway.
That's the
Yeah.
industry it
I think
is.
I'm like, I think
Like
I'm
you
just
said,
too
there's always been an element of it, even going back to the 80s, like
old.
bands would sign contracts and never get like a percent. I suppose the difference now is that they are actually, they're not even passing on like a, you know, a fraction of it. So, and you get things like Ticketmaster and the ticket debate about, you know, how high ticket fees are, even on resale and things like that. You know, it's just crazy. Like you said, everyone's sort of making money. And I've had this argument about like technology as well. It's like all of these technologies that have been sort of based on the back of music, yet the people who are making the music, they'll get rid of anything out of it, you know? Same with Spotify and things like that, you know?
I
It's just
know,
mad.
like they're all getting money out of it. It's crazy. Crazy. There is money there, that's the thing, but we're just not getting any of it. It's like we're treated as second class citizens. I honestly believe that in the music industry, they like it's unbelievable how we get treated. But yeah, but you know, I say that I'm a glutton for punishment, clearly. So still, you know, absolutely selling my stuff just so that I can make tours happen. And so yeah, so if anyone's listening that's like, please come to somewhere, so it's like, yeah, really, I try it, even just to get to, like, you know, really try. But it's not as easy now.
I suppose that links to a question I was going to ask you about Blood Red Shoes, I guess, because
Yeah.
I noticed it was 20 years, a couple of years ago, since Blood Red Shoes started, or you were celebrating an anniversary
Yeah,
anyway. What are your sort of highlights or lowlights of that period? Of like, that it's a hard question, but
oh god, there's been so many highlights. I mean, I wouldn't change it, you know, the world. I mean, there's a few things I wish I'd done that we got offered and then we can do it or whatever, but yeah, no, I think we've had amazing like experiences playing all over the world. We really have been everywhere. Like, we just came back from Georgia and Turkey and Belgrade. We went to Serbia. So like, we're still getting around to new places, which is amazing. So the highlights really is just traveling the world. That is, you know, something you can't, like, I would never have got to do that. And just, yeah, playing like some of the biggest like main stages, playing Reading Festival main stage a couple of times. That was pretty great for me because I grew up going there. I played Glastonbury, done loads of main stages in Europe. Don't know, just crazy. Played with like Rage Against the Machine, played with like some of, yeah, just did the ATP Festival. Don't know, we've just done a lot, and like headlining shows I never thought we would get to. We work really, really hard, but we also like have such a nice fan base, and they're like, as I've got older, the more I've realised how much I love my fan base and how, when I support other people that have been doing this, I see how the difference is, like when we have support acts and how like welcoming our fans are, and how like, yeah, I just really, really love our fan base. I think they're just, yeah, wonderful. And so I'm so grateful. And yeah, so that's been, this is like, there's so many highlights really, and crazy stories along the way. And like, yeah, lowlights, like, I don't know, just things that would happen. Like, I got beaten up once on tour by a band and had to have stitches, and like it got hidden really because no one wanted me to, all the music industry didn't want me to sue. And yeah, that was when I was pretty young, and I think I've like, that's definitely shaped me a little bit of like about the music industry, because I feel like no one, but I think it'd be very different if it happened now, for example. But
yeah,
I think no one had my back, and no one like took, like, it kind of made it like a joke, and yeah, just kind of wanted me to just like, told me it'd be really bad for my career if I said anything about it. Live Nation, that was. So yeah, those things like that has happened that was, well, yeah, not like, not cool.
Thanks for sharing that with us, Laura. That's, I'm really sorry to hear about your experience early in your career. And as we have seen with a lot of high profile cases recently, these abuses of women in music still go on today. So it's really brave and important of you to speak out and to share that with us. I really appreciate you doing that. I think as a man in the industry as well, it's really important to call it out.
Did your, I was reading on your Wikipedia, and Wikipedia, yeah, can never, it's not always foolproof, a bit like AI, you know, but I was reading, did your first album leak as well? I was reading about that.
Yeah, it did, yeah. I mean, that's so funny now, isn't it?
It is, because now, like, everything leaks, doesn't it? It's like, you're literally leaking it, really.
At the time, it was deliberately such a big deal.
Like, yeah, yeah.
I don't know how anyone did that back then, but I remember it did come out, like, it got leaked, like, 6 months before, so that was kind of annoying, because I guess it was all, like, illegal downloads of it.
And it was that era, wasn't it?
Yeah. But actually, now I think about it, that's quite cool that people cared enough.
Yeah. So, yeah, there was this, you know, Los Campesinos, that band. I think their like early EP was leaked everywhere, and it sort of helped them gain a buzz, you know, really.
Yeah.
I think there were a few bands like Arcade Fire, yeah, Arctic Monkeys. A lot of those bands, like, it actually helped them, really, didn't it? You know, it might be terrible at the time. You're like, oh, no, it's leaked. But
yeah, I think at the time, because it's your first record. And you're like,
yeah.
You're over it. I think I was pretty young as well. I was like 19 or something. So I was like, you know, felt really like
devastated.
But actually, it's quite funny now I think about it.
Yeah.
And also, like, yeah, isn't it amazing that people cared that much then? Like, There's so much stuff now you could just listen to. No one's got the attention span anymore. So
yeah,
it's quite like actually quite nice times, really, where people were so excited about a record that they would try and find it and leak it. So yeah.
Different era, sort of MySpace era and all that as well. I kind of miss MySpace in a way. and also just like reflecting on your like musical evolution, because I've just been listening back, you know, to a lot of Blood Red Shoes stuff. And yeah, I just reflecting on sort of how the band has changed, the sound.
Yeah, it
is it more like, because it going from sort of more spikier, garage rocky kind of sound earlier on into more like of a widescreen rock sound. And then your last album had a lot of different shades on there, like some more of electronic stuff as well, cinematic stuff. So is it more like what turns you on and what you're in, exciting you musically that you trying to reflect?
I guess
or...
it's like growing up as well. Like we're literally growing up together, like in this, and like our music tastes are quite different now. Like we've got stuff that we both like, but like Steve's very much, he's a producer now, so he produces loads of electronic stuff. So he's kind of And yeah, I don't know. It just kind of like whatever happens. We never talk about it. We just kind of see what happens. But I have had this like feeling that our next record, we'd probably be going back a bit more to like a bit more garagey, sonic youthy. I'm feeling that at the moment. So
yeah, that's kind of come back round in a way, isn't it? I've been listening to this band Geese. You know those guys?
Like yeah, they're good.
Yeah. So that sound seems to be back in vogue almost. In a way, I was listening to your stuff and thinking, because like you've probably been going as long as we've had a website. So it's kind of interesting to me. It's almost like the different sounds that were not in, but, you know, more on vogue at the time, you know, and I can hear that through it. It's quite cool.
Yeah, actually, like the early bit was like, you know, we had all these like indie producers that wanted to like do the indie thing, but live was always a lot heavier. And so when we'd like play, we'd be like, what? But yeah, it's just kind of, I think because we don't talk about it, we just do
you
it.
Just do it, yeah.
And then our voices tie it together. But like our voices early on, we just sound so young. And like,
but like art rock was a thing then, wasn't there? Was it even Art Rocker magazine and things like that? Yeah. It was a different era, really.
It's almost like a diary, isn't it? Listening back.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's cool listening back, though, because I was thinking you, I do remember that you were more like that earlier on, but like I still, when I think of Blood Red Shoes, I think of like rocking, you know, rocking live, you know. So that's what I was thinking of. And then when I was listening back, I was like, they did that. And then this, and then the new stuff's more eclectic as well and stuff. So it's good that you're sort of evolving, because some bands, they can get stuck in a, you know, not that there's some, there's merit to both, isn't there? You know?
Yeah. I think if you've got a really distinctive sound, it's cool. But I think for us personally, it was just more like what's going to excite us.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, you know, we'd just be churning out sort of same old things. So we always like to, we always really like to push ourselves. And I think that's probably what I've also done in my solo thing, just like try and see what I can do.
Yeah.
And not be sort of stuck in one place. And that's a lot, to be honest, to do with just like us keeping it interesting as well, because then we'll be more excited to play. And also our audience have grown with us. So they've grown up too. And you know, I don't want to like insult them, just keep them churning out the same old thing. So, we do our best to try and like do something a bit different. And I'm sure the next one will be a bit different again.
It's quite a hard question because you've got like over 20 years of material. But is there any, what songs do you enjoy playing live? I suppose a lot of them, but like most, I suppose.
Blubbered Cheese. I like playing, there's one song, we can't play it without other members, sadly, so we get to play it a few times, but I like playing Eye to Eye.
Yeah.
And I get to like sing quite a bit, and I like playing that. I like to play on our new record, well, it's not new anymore.
But yeah.
Morbid Fascination is always
Yeah. Yeah.
And
Wow.
then I'm trying to think of like, it really goes in phases because, like, oh God, I was so bored of playing like I Wish of Someone Better. We always play it. I mean, that song I wrote for my old band before even Blood Red Shoes,
Oh, really?
music, yeah, the guitar line. So it's been going around forever. But then sometimes when I play it, it's just so fun because everyone loves it. And so then I get into it again and it can be pretty fun.
Yeah.
So I don't know really. But yeah, I say I do miss playing eye to eye because we don't get to play a lot. And yeah, I do get excited when we get to do Morbid Fascination.
Cool. I hesitate to ask you this, but this term annoys me. But what do you think of the term indie sleaze?
Oh,
Because
yeah.
I find it quite like because I was around, like I kind of was around at that time.
Yeah.
I find it a little bit regressive and retrospect, you know, like it's very retrospective,
Yeah.
putting a sort of a term on a whole era of music that's
Yeah.
quite different. Like even down to something silly, like I saw Hit List. It's like a pop music game show on TV, and they had a category on indie sleaze, and it was Goldfrapp. And something
Wow.
like the Libertines, and I was like, well, actually, those are quite two quite different acts, actually, you know.
Yeah.
And I suppose in a way it annoys me a little bit because there were lots of different scenes then, I felt like there was a lot of different things going on. But I understand it's more of like a TikTok style thing, but
Yeah, I mean,
it just offends me as a word, as a
yeah, I get
phrase.
you. I don't really mind it, but I think it's kind of funny. But I think, yeah, if you think about Goldfrapp, I reckon it's more of a fashion thing because Goldfrapp was like glitter and stuff, and that was quite of the time. And then like Libertines is also that kind of like, I don't know what you'd call that kind of fashion, but I feel like it's more of a fashion thing than in.
Yeah, because you probably put Amy Winehouse in there as well.
Yeah,
You saw, it's
definitely.
the, more the look. Yeah, you're probably right. And it is
What?
like people who are like younger people who are getting into that now. I get it in a way, but it almost seems to have become a term that has been applied to a whole era
Yeah.
now, and that annoys me slightly. But then I suppose a lot of these terms like indie landfill that you had at the time, that
Yeah.
was slightly disrespectful as
Yeah,
well,
that's quite respectful.
even though, you know, probably a lot of those bands probably did deserve it. But
Okay.
I suppose, and also there's a difference between like coming up with a term for something at the time than
Yeah.
like 20 years later going, oh yeah, you know, indie sleaze, you know.
Yeah.
But
What I am bummed about though is that there is an Indie Sleaze Instagram and I've yet to see a photo of Love and Shoes in it. So
yeah, I
that's
thought you'd be on there.
yeah, I thought we'd be on there as well because it's all like stuff we used to play, like White Heat and all these
Yeah.
things. And I'm like, where are we?
Cocoa and,
Maybe
you
we were too
know, all this.
grunge. No, I had the Indie Sleaze haircut.
You did have a bit of that look, didn't you?
Yeah, I
Because
had a bit of a fringe.
weirdly, I was listening to your album before, and it pops up with the images, doesn't it? Sometimes, you know, when
Oh
you're listening.
no.
So.
There's no getting away. That's the sad thing about the good and bad thing about the internet. It's all out there. You try and be cool, but it Googles you and then you see all your indie sleaze
I
photos.
try and hide just like, and then people, but the problem with that, then people don't really know what I look like. So that's a bit of a problem. But yeah. But yeah, I know what you mean. It's sort of like, it's like having your diary, like you were talking about diary with music. It's like having your
Yeah.
diary
Yeah.
online, isn't it, as well?
Totally. I think I have friends in music, they like try and get all stuff taken down. And I'm just like, if I started doing that, it'd be a full-time job. I can't be bothered
Yeah.
with that. Just
It's
leave it
like Googling yourself as well, isn't it?
there.
It's best not to be doing that, really.
I actually read your album review that you did to me because I got sent it and I was like, okay, I'm gonna read it. But to be honest, I normally don't read them. I'm normally like I think I used to read them all when I was young and it would like affect me if something was, but now I'm just like, I try and like, I don't, things don't, annoy, like things really don't affect me in the way they did at all. It's really.
I think most of you, I understand where you're coming from because you spent, you know, you could spend years on something and then somebody
Yeah.
can trash it. But
Yeah.
I think things like Instagram comments or YouTube comments are actually much harsher than any album review you read these days, to be honest.
YouTube used to be brutal. God. But then that's how you know people like actually noticing you when they're brutal, because I'm like, okay. But now I just get nice ones mostly. So. It's because I'm not as popular now. I think it was like, I remember we got this like Guardian review, which was so harsh. It was like saying that it was about our first album. It was like, soon these guys will realize that it's too hard to be music. And it was something about, it was so bad. It was like, God, I actually could find it. Because it's actually shocking that it's the Guardian. But yeah, it was like,
I think like music journalism used to be much more brutal, actually.
So brutal. Oh
yeah. Especially sort of 80s, 90s, Melody Maker, things like that, you know.
Yeah.
You just would not get away with it now.
No way. Do you remember like the era of like Vice and stuff?
Yeah, oh God, yes. I read this review about Joanna Newsom in there. Yeah. And apparently it was some elaborate joke, but it was like, it was quite distastefully sexual and, yeah, very unpleasant. But somebody said to me, oh, it's actually a joke. But I was like, well, I don't find that very funny. Because apparently the guy who wrote it knows her or something. But it's like, well,
all right.
But that's still weird, isn't it?
Yeah, that is weird. That is weird.
That doesn't make it any better, to be honest.
No.
But yeah, Vice used to do some horrible ones.
I think I found this one. I'm just
okay.
Because I remember being like, I remember when I think back to it, I'm like, that is absolutely.
Well, yeah, because The Guardian's got, has got a bit of weight to it, you know, as a name.
Yeah. Let's see. Blubber Shoes. Some people are into those bands who look like students constantly about to get their periods. Blood Red Shoes do it better than most. They inhabit that world of Feature and Plan B, front cover art rocker, and Five Features and Enemy before they realise that touring is a pain. They'll never make any money and quit the band to get proper jobs. That was it.
Oh, that's harsh.
It's so harsh.
Is that a live review or a...
It's a single review, so they don't even talk about the single.
Yeah, who wrote that? Oh, maybe you shouldn't say.
Andy Kappa. Oh, no, I don't care. Andy Kappa.
Andy Kappa.
I don't know who that is.
Never heard of him.
But, I mean, constantly...
The bit about periods as well, that's awful.
Yes! Blubber Shoes do it better than most. You wouldn't say that if it was two guys, would you?
No, that's terrible.
That's terrible.
But he's just sneering at a whole scene there, isn't he, really?
Yeah, but it's like nothing...
And also, you're still going, so you had the last laugh. So
21 years later.
Exactly, so there you go.
And everyone else that he's done reviews on here, don't think they're around.
But, well, that is something, isn't it? It's like, I did think that. It's like, you guys have been going a long time. You know, it is a long time, really, these days. A lot of those bands that were around then, a lot of them don't exist anymore. They don't, you know.
No, and they're not, like, doing it. Well, they don't do anything.
They're not active,
yeah. Like, yeah, we try to keep, you know, we've got our label. We put out other people's records. We don't have management, we do everything ourselves, and yeah, it's hard, but we're still here. So
it's an achievement, isn't it? You know,
because we actually do work really hard, Andy Kappa.
Exactly. All right, brilliant to talk to you. Good luck with it. And your album is out now.
Thanks so much.
If anybody wants to, what are your, have you got like a website, Bandcamp, etc.?
Bandcamp, I've got. I make my website myself, so the fact that it's probably never updated. So
yeah.
You go on to Bandcamp is where you can buy the record. I send them myself, and yeah, that's where they are. So yeah, thank you for supporting the record as well.
Like, no problem. And it's available on vinyl as well, I notice.
Yeah,
red vinyl.
Red vinyl, yeah. I'm going to try and get some CDs made when I get a minute, but for the moment, it's, just red vinyl.
So, yeah, Bye Bye Jackie. Go and get that. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, go get it.
Yeah. Thanks for talking to me, and good luck with the tour and the album and everything.
Thank you so much.
No problem. You've been listening to In the Spotlight with myself, Bill Cummings, and Laura Mary Carter. Bye.
Bye. Thanks. Bye.